Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour for April 26, 2018, and a little bit of fun facts on the upcoming fall election. And this is interesting information. I'll also be talking about buses in China. I'll be talking about wind generators and money relative to those in the outrageous claims that are being made and financial claims. So I think it's important for people to understand, because right now the United States has one offshore wind farm that's been in place. It's the Block Island wind farm. And to date, pretty much nothing that they have proposed is coming true. That's called Block Island Wind Farm because it was supposed to support the people of Block Island, who get very expensive electricity from the mainland. And I never quite understood this rationale for charging people. I would think that public utility commission would protect people in outlying areas, because basically the people who lived on Block Island off the northeast coast of the U.S. were paying three times what their neighbors were paying on the mainland. And of course, there was infrastructure cost, etc. And one has to understand that. But in this day where we try and accommodate people with special situations, it seemed a little far-fetched. So the companies that put this together and the government agencies and everything proposed a wind farm that would be offshore, out in the ocean. And there was a tremendous amount of environmental impact, people who were against it, the fishermen, etc. And what they have learned is that the fish leave the area where the windmills are installed. These are the three-blade wind generator, because they have a very high RPM inside. They have a transmission, and there's high electrical noise and high vibrational noise. And so that's one of the things I did when I invented the wing generator, was to make sure there was no high vibrational noise. And that's the whole issue of dealing with low RPM. And there's the technology to convert to electricity and et cetera. It's difficult, but it's doable. But anyway, that's another side issue, the environmental impact. But finally, they've got this installed. It's the only offshore wind farm in the United States. The Great Britain and a lot of the other countries around the world have invested heavily in offshore wind. England just had an issue this past couple weeks where they realized that one of their installations off the North Shore, the propellers on these wind generators were deteriorating at a much faster rate, and it's going to cost them nearly $1 billion to fix this. Now, these costs are absolutely horrendous, but whenever you get into something big like this, you run into these, you know, major issues. But back to Block Island, the electricity has not been routed to Block Island. And here's the issue. As time progressed over the many years that this installation was planned and discussed and then ultimately installed, the cost of fuel went down drastically. And this is because of the basically the worldwide petrol situation, where the price of crude oil has gone down and all related products. So the end result is that the creation of electricity on shore that was delivering to Block Island has now brought the prices of electricity on Block Island from the mainland, the power generators, the infrastructure, has brought the price down to the point where the wind towers are no longer able to compete. And then there's this huge expense, and it's like, well, they built this supposedly for Black Island. But here's the issue. If you look at the literally billions of dollars that were spent on this project, and then try and justify it in terms of a couple hundred homes on a remote island, it doesn't make financial sense. And so one of the numbers that we come up with here is a $1.8 billion price tag, and this is for a new wind farm that's being proposed, that they're saying that this will provide electricity for 35,000 houses. And so that turns out to be around $50,000 per house. Now, I don't know how much you pay for electricity, but it would take me about 35 lifetimes to pay $50,000 in electric bills. But the wind generators, when they make these proposals, they spec them out at what we call nameplate value. In other words, if it's a maximum of 2 megawatts production with the wind generator, these I'm talking about the 3-blade wind generators, if it's a 2-megawatt wind generator, they classify that as a 2-megawatt wind generator, when in reality, it will be lucky to produce 20% of that. And so now, if you take back the 20% and look at that, that's a 5 times difference. Now, the $1.8 billion investment will only power 7,000 houses, a number greatly reduced, and the expense per house will be $250,000, $250,000. Now, there again, that's the realistic number. So when they sell these projects, and now New York State is in jumping in big time. Maine is jumping in big time. In fact, Maine just canceled all wind generator projects on their land, on the land of the state of Maine, because tourists go up there to see the beautiful colors and the rolling hills, and Maine makes it a good portion of its income off of tourism. And so now people go up there and see big 3-blade wind generators scattered all over the countryside, and it's having a detrimental effect on tourism. People don't see that as beautiful anymore, and I wonder why. They're ugly. They're an eyesore. It's, you take this beautiful landscape and they're not producing electricity. But anyway, this is getting into a real quagmire. Now, there are groups, the European Against Wind Energy, and there's the American, and there's the Canadians, and then there's other organizations that are violently opposed to wind energy. But when you go, say you do a Google search on, in fact, I've done this, on groups that oppose wind energy, and nothing comes up. None of these groups surface on the first tier of responses coming back from Google. It's all pie in the sky, rah, rah, isn't wind good, we're selling more and more every year. And these things simply do not work. And if, you know, you can have theoretical calculations and everything else and talk about Bett's law and theoretical limits, but the end result is that the wind simply blows right through them. On a 30, with a day with 30 mile per hour wind, and they're moving at around 16 RPM, that's the maximum revolutions per minute that these 3-blade wind generators would spin, an estimated 97% of the wind is blowing right through them without doing anything, without being captured at all. So how can you have a device that has 97% of the wind blowing through and then claim that it's doing a high percentage of the theoretical limit? I mean, it's just absolutely absurd. But what's more absurd are the numbers, the financial numbers that are being bantered around. And the one issue I always bring up is that in all of this, in the billions of dollars of planning. They're now looking at offshore installations all along the East Coast of the United States. Nobody ever mentions how many power plants of nuclear or coal or natural gas or petroleum-based power plants, how many of these will shut down due to the presence of these offshore wind farms. And you can go through reports, extensive government reports on the wind conditions and the viability and the payback and all of the rah-rah, isn't this wonderful? And then the increase in the, you know, the number of jobs. They always love to create jobs as a result of this, which really isn't true. You create temporary jobs that last for a short amount of time, and then those jobs are over. Once the installation is in, those people then are basically go on unemployment. So it does not really create jobs. It creates temporary employment. But the end result is not a single power plant is going to shut down because of the presence of these billions and billions of dollars of investment. And as I say, when they talk about the number of houses that will be supplied electricity, it's really incorrect. You can multiply that by 0.2, which is the industry standard, or as in the case of at the wind farms off of England, the North Shore and the North Sea, when they're not working, then they're producing no electricity. Anyway, this is a long, complicated story, but it's one that I'm not going to spend a lot of time dwelling on this. But the public in the United States is about ready to be taken to the cleaners with General Electric, Siemens, Vestas, and the other multiple three-blade wind generator companies that are trying to get in under the wire with the tax credits. Now, there's a new method by which they get paid, and that is by not producing carbon dioxide. So there's a tax credit that they can apply for and get money. But the end result is that there's profit where there's no real business. There's no none of these things would exist. In fact, the European corporations have been combining because sales are dropping, because people are realizing, people are coming to the conclusion that these things don't work. And unfortunately, it's giving wind a very bad name. It's when you approach people, and it's my estimation that this was the plan all along. That and I've had scientists just the other day, had a very well-trained physicist who was looking at my work, looking at the work of the work that I've done exposing the three-blade wind generators as being a farce, and explaining to this physicist that, you know, and well-trained in PhD physics physicist, explaining that the wind just blows right through these. And the response after kind of some time and thinking is that how could an entire industry be built on a sham, on something that could not possibly work, you know, it's because all the wind just blows right through this thing. It doesn't work. But how could this industry still be producing billions of dollars of contracts, have the state of New York, for example, the Cuomo is his name, the governor of New York, anyway, stating that they are going to go whole hog into wind generation offshore. And that's their goal. And the politicians, you try and get through the layers of, but the secretaries and the contracts and the contacts in the offices, etc., to try and get up to the people who are in charge. And it's just like walking through molasses that gets thicker and thicker as you get close. And then you finally just get bogged down in this mire. And ultimately, you cannot get a word in edgewise because these industries are so powerful. The American Wind Energy Association, AWEA, the Canadian Wind Energy Association, and there's other ones like that. But their PR, their press is so domineering, and it's the fix is in so much that it just makes it impossible to get a word in edgewise. But that's why I'm discussing this a bit on the air. Because the reason is, I'm discussing this, is because in the near future, in the next 3 years, a lot of these wind projects will be pushed through. And you will be like standing there looking at like, and like, who's doing this? Who's approving this? Who's making these contracts? Is there any clause to take these things down if they don't work? And the answer is no. The people that are making the contracts are idiots. And they're trying to do something green. And once again, anytime government gets involved in something, it's almost a guaranteed failure because they simply don't know what they're doing. Okay, so enough of that. Just a little bit of an update on the wing generator. It's moving forward. And all I can say is that I hope it gets the public notoriety soon enough so that, and then also the ability to get this in front of the right people soon enough before they start handing out contracts to the companies like GE and Siemens and the rest of the companies that are putting out products that simply don't work. And if you look at these companies also, if you look at the company profiles for Siemens and General Electric, their primary business is making products for the Central Power Company. That's their main business. This wind thing is kind of like a toy. It's a game on the side. And what they're going to do is capture all the alternative energy money so that if anything real comes along, there's not going to be any money left. And people are going to have a very bad taste in their mouth if they finally wake up, or when they finally wake up to the fact that this has been a giant sham all along. And, of course, politicians never do that. They simply move on to the next office, and their trail of disaster is somewhere behind them. Anyway, okay, so that's enough of that. But all I'm saying is in the next couple of years, you are going to be fleeced, especially if you live on the East Coast of the United States, fleeced royally, and they're going to make promises like your tax or your electric bill is going to go down. And then what you're going to find out is that it's really not going to go down, because I'm not aware of any place where bills have gone down because of the installation of three-blade wind generators. And certainly there's never been any closings of plants because of that. Okay, on to the next topic. And this is very interesting. In China, they are installing, now get this. So anyway, this is an article out of Bloomberg Technology News that China is adding like 9,000 plus electric buses per week. And this amounts to a London. Now, there are a lot of buses in London. And the bus fleet in London, in other words, all of the buses in London, the Chinese are adding that many electric buses every 5 weeks. That's an incredible number of buses. So the point of this article is that they are saving about 279,000 barrels of oil per day. and that number is increasing. So it's starting to actually be noticeable in the oil industry. So anyway, here are some other fun facts: that about 99% of the electric buses in the world are in China, and it's only 17% of the buses they have in China, but they're making great inroads. So there's 385,000 electric buses on the road throughout the world. So these are big, big numbers. But the point I want to make is they make it sound like this electric buses just run on electricity. Isn't that great? But where does the electricity come from? It comes from nuclear or coal burning, especially in China, coal burning power plants. And it's far more polluting. It's like out of sight, out of mind. It's like the ostrich with the head in the sand syndrome. Head in the sand, I can't see this. But the coal pollution to provide that, to burn the coal, produce the electricity, transport the electricity, charge the buses, then the return on investment with the charged batteries is not 100% efficient. And so anyway, the end pollution, and they're talking about saving carbon and all of this, I don't know what these people are thinking, because you're not saving anything. It's literally better to burn the petroleum if you're worried about CO2 and global warming. If that's your real motivation, then you create a lot more CO2 by burning the coal. So it's mind-boggling to see the end result here in terms of, people thinking this is good. And of course, what you do is you put that power plant outside of town and the pollution blows out over the Pacific Ocean to the United States. the pollution that's coming out of China is horrendous. The burning of dirty coal, etc. So, I'm not sure how to even approach this topic, because it is so distorted. And now get this statistic. This is absolutely amazing. It says that, of course, China is it is the worst polluted country in the world. I don't know if you can match India and China, but because of the growing population, etc., it says the nation's smogs were responsible for 1.6 million deaths in 2015. Good grief. 1.6 million people died in China because of smog, of pollution. And of course, that's not CO2. They're not dying from CO2. They're dying from the chemicals that are not burned cleanly in the petroleum burning process to power the buses. But what about the coal production? How many people are dying out there so that they don't die in the city? I mean, the offset here, once again, it just doesn't add up. That's why there has to be a real solution that provides electricity, because the one good thing is that these products exist, the electric cars, motorcycles, buses, trains already in use, airplanes coming online. But the source of the electricity has to change to wind power. And I've noticed that solar is not so much in the news. I think the wind energy associations are putting a lot more money into PR, and they're trying to rid themselves of the bad name that they have rightfully earned. They're doing away with that by tremendous pressure so that it just never comes to light. These groups are running around, the groups against wind energy are going around and spending a tremendous amount of time and effort, but having very little, if any, effect at all. Not in the government levels, not in the publicity levels, not in the public awareness levels. and especially in the United States, which is probably one of the more deep pocket markets in the world, because other companies like Germany, Belgium has put a moratorium on wind generators, actually outlawed them. England has invested heavily and are finding out that these things are, as we say, pigs a pig with lipstick. But the end result is that if I can get the wind generator in place and on a large enough scale, we've done calculations, and here are the numbers. Now, you've all seen those fields in Nebraska and Iowa and Kansas and other places out in California, east of San Diego, all of the place where you see these big fields of wind turbines, three-blade wind turbines. One single wind generator of 200 megawatts could replace 600 of those, or 1.5 million solar panels. That's how much energy is in the wind. And if you efficiently extract it, then you can eliminate, now just imagine that, the ecological cost. Now this is something that nobody talks about, nobody likes to talk about, because this is where the government subsidies and tax credits come in, is to pay for the three-blade wind generators, because economically, they would not be a business if it weren't for tax credits or some type of government assistance. But imagine that, take 600 of them, erase them, knock them down, turn them into scrap metal, and make furniture out of the carbon fiber blades. Start a nice furniture business where you cut them up and use it for something else. I don't know, car parts. I'm not sure. But 600 of those in one fell swoop with a single wing generator, and then those wing generators could be put offshore where there's always wind, and then if they're distributed properly, we will always have plenty of energy from the wind. But that's when you start closing down power plants. And so you keep a power plant active in certain regions because we're still going to need, for a long time into the future, we would still need power plants. Not all of them, but start to phase them out one by one. First the nuclear plants, and then the whatever other plants are, depends on the economics of the plants, but phase those out until ultimately we're literally running on wind energy. Now, there are other issues going on today, but anyway, I don't want to dwell too much onto that, but this is important. This is in the next 2 to 3 years where all of this is going to make it or break it. And I feel every day I work, I've sacrificed a lot of my personal life because I see this as being an absolute priority. And this just has to get out there, just has to, because if it doesn't happen in the next couple of years, then all of the money is going to be spent on projects that won't work. And there won't be any money left to put into projects that will work. And so it's very critical. The United States is lucky. It only has one offshore installation right now. And they're proposing more. Other ones are in the bidding process, are moving their way through government agencies. And those agencies, once these things get momentum, they start to get a life of their own. And that's the problem, because in the next couple of years, there is a big push, and there's a realization that we just cannot keep burning coal and other high energy content fuels. There's a realization, but these industries, the three-blade wind generator industry and solar panel industries, have a lot of government impact. And it's hard to get into the doors to tell them, hey, you're marching down the wrong road, this doesn't work. And when you send information to people that are in charge, whether they're congressmen or governors or whoever it is, when you send them vast amounts of information that would tell them, number one, people are discovering that these don't work, and number two, there is some product that does work, it's like almost impossible to get in the door. Okay, I'm going to switch gears a little bit here and talk about an article that came out this week. It was in Mercury News. A number of people sent this in. That, and of course, I'm a proponent for draining the lake at Yellowstone Park, the volcano, Yellowstone volcano. And the reason being is because the three mega volcanoes that have occurred in history, one only about 65 million years ago, one of those major volcanic eruptions, or all three of the major ones, were caused when there was a lake there. And this is known. I mean, this is empirical evidence that tells you that that lake is the problem. And all the other literally hundreds of eruptions at Yellowstone did not result in a catastrophic explosion. And in those, there was no lake. So it doesn't take a volcanologist to come to the conclusion that it's the water in the lake that's the problem. But this past week, an article, total information, disinformation article came out and kind of poo-pooed the conspiracy theorists who have been talking about Yellowstone exploding. And this includes major geologists, not just me. But the general belief in geology is that somehow the gases that are under the ground start to, I don't know what they start to do. I have yet to have anybody explain this to me in in even crude third grade words, what they expect happen. They just kind of like say it like, oh, well, as the gases come up, then they explode. Well, why didn't they explode when they were down there before? You know, it doesn't make any sense. The reason volcanoes explode is because the water table drops down, hits the magma, turns to steam, and you basically have a giant steam engine and just blows the top off. So how do you get enough energy to blow the top of a mountain 60 miles into the air? Where does that energy come from? And if it were contained in the ground, why is it not blowing off all the time? Why are we not seeing volcanic eruptions all the time? Well, it simply does not make any sense. The reason is because the water goes down during an earthquake when the earth starts to work and drops some even a little bit of water. It turns to steam, makes a hole. It's bigger, more water drops down, makes a bigger hole, and ultimately enough water gets down there that it breaks a fissure. And if that whole lake drops down and hits the magma, here's a good science question for somebody, say, the springtime. Maybe you're having a science project, and this would be a good one. Convert the amount of water in Lake Yellowstone. Get a topographical map. Determine the amount of water in the lake, then convert that into steam, and look at the work that is done by expanding water into steam. By, you know, take a gram of water, convert it into steam, see how much work is expended. And now take that and multiply it by the amount of cubic centimeters of water in Lake Yellowstone and determine the amount of energy that would be expended, that would be created, and then put that number in terms of, for example, megatons of TNT, in other words, millions of tons of TNT, which is used to measure the power of nuclear explosions. And so you could also put it in terms of the multiple of nuclear bombs that destroyed Hiroshima and Nagasaki, or the largest, say, 50 megaton bombs that the Russians and the U.S. have in their arsenal. Put it in terms of multiples of that, and then determine the amount of energy that will be created when that lake drains down and hits the magma. Be a wonderful science project. And I'd have to warn you, kids, though, your teachers may not appreciate this because it's not in the textbook. You know, it's not in the syllabus, which is one of my big criticisms of education. The teachers all have to write a syllabus, a lesson plan, and they cannot deviate from that, because if they do, then they could be sued or fired. So teachers, and of course they get a textbook just to be safe, they create a lesson plan based on a textbook, and then they teach that, basically read the book to the kids. The kids repeat the book back on a test, and if you get all the answers right, if you happen to remember everything correctly, purely rote memory, then you get an A, and then you're successful. Wow, that's education today. What a racket. Okay, there's a topic that's very important here, and I try and stay away from political issues as much as possible. When I'm a guest on other shows, I get a little bit more political. I try and keep more to science and topics regarding science and engineering on this show. And of course, my paid cast, I do strictly science, scientific topics. And by the way, right now in my paid cast, I'm doing the lectures relative to my books. It's something I've wanted to do for a really, really long time, and I'm finally doing it. So if you're not a member of my paid cast, go and join. Just $3.95 a month. And the topic now, I'm taking my books one at a time, and I'm dealing with the scientific topics relative to my books. I'm starting out April with the Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes book. And these will take some time because I'm taking little pieces of the book, expanding on it, and putting things into perspective. So anyway, that's what's going on in the paid cast. That'll be going on for a long time, and that'll be, I'm doing that because I want this for posterity. And so check that out. If you're not a member of the subscriber to the paid cast, just go to my webpage and that's there. But right now I wanted to talk, and I'm not taking political sides or anything here. I'm just going to read you some basically facts about the upcoming election here. And it's a time when this country is teetering back and forth. And so it's important, a lot of times midterm elections don't really cause that much excitement, but it should at this point. And anyway, I'll read some of these fun facts. That the Senate, in other words, the House and the Senate elections will be held this November 6th in 2018. And there are 33 of the 100 seats in the Senate are being are up for grabs, and there are also two seats being contested in special elections. And so, of course, they will serve the next 6 years. The Democrats have 24 seats up for election, as well as two independents. Two independents who apparently are considered Democrats, and the Republicans have 9 seats up for election. So once again, of the 33 total Senate seats, and remember that if you remember your facts about our government, there are 100 seats in the Senate and 435 in the House of Representatives. So at any rate, once again, so there's 33 seats up for grabs. 24 of these are currently Democrats, and 9 of them are currently Republicans. And so right now, interestingly enough, the Republicans have control of the House, or I'm sorry, of the Senate by 2 people. And so this is critical because it's so close. But the question is, are the Democrats going to lose some of those positions and possibly gain others? Or what's the overall balance going to be? And of course, I'm not going to get into a political debate about who's better or wherever. But you can look up maps of which states have openings and which states are being affected in this election. Okay, so then if we look at the House of Representatives, every seat in the House of Representatives is up for election this fall. So that is a really a shooting gallery to try and predict that one. And the current situation is that this is another interesting fun fact, that the Democrats are defending 10 seats of those 24 in states that Donald Trump won in the 2016 election. So 10 of those seats potentially could swing Republican. And then the Republicans are only defending one seat in a state that was won by Hillary Clinton in 2016. So, these are just numbers. What do they really mean? Well, I'm not sure. But you may remember back in the Paul Wellstone days, he was a senator from Minnesota, and he was the swing vote. At the time of the elections, he was the swing vote, and he was voting against the Iraq War. And this was when Rumsfeld and the boys wanted to go in there. And, this was the beginning of the seven-country takedown that had been planned by the what we call neocons. But at any rate, Paul Wellstone ends up dead in an air crash. And the investigation into that air crash is totally scrubbed by the FAA. And basically, him and his family, either one of his wife or his daughter, could have run for his seat, which did happen in a previous race. I think it was down in Mississippi where a senator was killed in an air crash. And it was a highly political issue, which made it look like somebody had actually waxed this guy. In a very much in the case of Wellstone, and then the guy that came in and replaced Wellstone voted in favor of going to the Vietnam or to the Iraq War. And so that was Paul Wellstone didn't buy into all of the shenanigans that were going on to draw the United States into the war. And he basically said in public, he said, I'm not buying into this, I'm not voting for it. And a couple of weeks later, he was dead. So all I'm saying is that we're heading into a time here that there's uncharted waters. Let me just say that, because the government is up for grabs. And there's a lot of behind-the-scene maneuvering to try and basically do anything that it takes to, well, I'll just let you imagine what can go on behind the scenes. But it would behoove most people to understand, if you live in a state where there are elections coming up this fall, and who are the candidates, and take time out to vote. Because literally, this is an extremely important election, probably a lot more important than many elections that we've had in your lifetime, unless you're really young and it's the first time you're voting. But even in that case, try and get a handle on what's going on here, because the future of the United States is really at risk and divided. So we'll see, but it's important. I thought it important to give you some of these statistics about the upcoming election. There's a lot of variables. There's a lot of speculation as to who might take whose seat. I know some seats, for example, Debbie Wasserman Schultz in Florida has a real competitor coming up in the Republican side, a black woman that was a veteran in the Navy, a nurse, and is pointing out that Debbie Wasserman Schultz employees hacked into the entire Congress, and she kept that guy on staff even after they arrested his brother and wife that had absconded to, I believe it was Pakistan, with money and information, and that they were feeding information about U.S. Congress and activity out of the country. So anyway, there's a lot of complex issues, so I suggest that you start to look at alternative medias, because the mainstream media is fixed. You're not going to get any real information there. And start searching out alternative media that are going to talk about the real issues, not the pretend issues that are coming from the CNNs, the Candy Nugget News, or the other ones, the Washington Post and the New York Times or MSNBC, the fake news, literally, or the news agencies that are feeding you the standard party line that comes literally out of the deep state, and that's a very broad term. I could go into a lot of detail, but become aware of this upcoming election. Start to follow it. Now is the time, spring before the election, and understand who are the candidates, where they are, and then get out and vote, because there's going to be a lot of cheating, I can tell you that. And there appears to have been, I believe it was up in Pennsylvania, there appears to have been a bit of monkey business along in the voting up there. And there was a special election that occurred recently. So become aware in the power of the vast number of people in the United States. The power of them voting is something that I was very surprised to see the vast numbers of people that came out and voted in the past election. And a lot of people who had not voted for probably decades came out and voted. So and the point is that we're heading into an election here that is very important. And so don't underestimate it. Don't think, oh, it's just a midterm election. It doesn't count. It very much does count. And the United States' future very much depends on you getting out and voting. And quite frankly, I never thought I would say that. I never quite thought I would say that, but I'm saying it now. For many years, I didn't vote. I thought that the system was rigged, and the last election was rigged, but it wasn't rigged enough. Let's just put it that way. And the American people came out and voted in such numbers that even a rigged election could not replace the number of people voting. So anyway, once again, start to understand what the issues are, who the candidates are, where the important places are, and maybe take a little time out, call people, talk to people. And I'll tell you something else too. I've been talking about the United States election coming up. There are elections that have occurred and recently, and elections that are coming up in many countries around the world. And the people are taking back their countries. This is what's going on. And the European bankers are losing control. The programs that they put in place, just the people aren't buying it anymore. And they're coming out in such numbers that in a lot of these countries, elections have been fixed for a long time. Just like in the United States, where you had dynasties, you had the Bush-Clinton dynasty, where they just trade off every couple of years, and they were already planning the next generation, you know. And that's been short-circuited. So in a lot of these other countries, it's far worse. It's 100 times, possibly 1,000 times worse. And so these countries are one by one being reclaimed by the people. And so this is a worldwide situation. It's not just in the United States. It's everywhere. So become aware, start listening, start becoming aware. Who are the candidates, etc. Okay, enough of that. Okay, I'm going to go into a topic. I'm not sure how much you know about this. It's called 3D printing. And because of what I'm doing with the wing generator and other things in the background, it's something that I've had to deal with. And this is an amazing technology where you create a three-dimensional product on a printer. And when it first started out, people were making prototypes, and they were a little bit crude. They weren't exact. But now they're making these where they build them up out of materials. Basically, instead of printing and the print coming out and hitting a piece of paper and making a letter shape, they're actually building up a surface. And with a three-dimensional printing head, and can make a shape of a product. So anything you can define in a computer, in a CAD/CAM drawing, or measure, you could take a part that exists of one material, create it in another material by simply measuring it, putting the parameters in a computer program, and then printing that exact same part but in another material much stronger. And it's kind of like there's a technique in jewelry. It's called the lost wax technique. It was used throughout history to create diamond rings, etc. So a jeweler would take jeweler's wax, which is a very hard type of wax, and create, say, a ring or a piece of jewelry or a carving that would be a necklace or a brooch or whatever piece of jewelry, and carve it into this hard wax. And then you take that and you'd put it in a sand cast. I don't know all the complexities. I have some friends that are jewelers, so I know they do this, and I have kind of an idea of the basics. But then they take and heat it up, and of course the wax heats up and melts and comes out. Then they fill it up with gold, or typically gold, and create the jewelry piece. So it's the jewelry then has the form of the wax. And but now with 3D printing, anything you can put in a computer part, and they're getting to the point where these parts are stronger than steel. And a very exact, it used to be, for example, when they did, say, iron castings, they would do an iron casting, like, say, for an engine block. They do an iron casting, and then it had to be machined out. The pistons, etc., in the top had to be machined off, and then that was the engine block with the piston, the holes for the pistons, etc. And that was the technique. But now they can literally build to the point where it's so exact that there's really no machining required after it's printed. And I just saw an ad the other day where the printing now is becoming so hard. One company is claiming that its printing material is 23 times harder than any previous 3D printing techniques. But wouldn't it be interesting if they could start to now create diamond structures that had shape and function? Because we know that you can create diamonds with carbon gas in a vacuum and with an electric current of electrons. So wouldn't it be interesting if all of a sudden we could start making useful shapes out of diamond and building structures up? Another thing that's occurring right now with carbon is the what's known as graphene, something that is a complex structure of carbon, but they're starting to get so they can make individual atomic sheets of this stuff. And I think this is where the new improvements in battery technology are going to come from, as opposed to, say, lithium ion, which is the primary material used today in batteries and like the buses I was talking about, industrial buses. Some of those buses use a water type of battery, which was available a number of years ago. But at any rate, very interesting technologies coming along, and a lot of these things are going to come together. I would estimate in the next 3 to 5 years, we're going to have amazing advancements in battery technology. In other words, the ability to store electrical energy in a battery and then retrieve it for useful work, and then also the ability to charge those batteries very rapidly, and also that you would be able to recharge them many times, and also possibly discharge them very rapidly. So very interesting developments in all of these fields that are going to affect your lives very soon. Okay, changing gears for the last couple minutes, I want to encourage people again to check out the Paidcast, and $3.95 per month, and each week you get an updated new lecture on scientific topics that are right now, like I say, I'm doing my book reviews, I'm doing discussions of my entire book set, and so that's very interesting. And then relative to the water filters, I have not been able to change the pricing. I intend to raise the pricing because of the outrageous shipping. I just had a filter package that went from the warehouse over to Pennsylvania, and it cost $30. I mean, this is just outrageous that what UPS is charging for shipping these days. And, of course, depends on factors. If it's out in the country or something, I understand that. But good grief, that's just, it's doubled in the last year. So I'm going to have to raise prices to absorb some of that increase due to shipping. But right now, the prices are still the same and free shipping. So if you're interested in water filters, my GF water filters are the best on the planet. And what else can I say? They take out everything with one filter, no add-on filters required. Go to the webpage and all the information there. And if you're interested in the wing generator, if you have a large farm or ranch where you need electrical power, just send us the information. We'll put you on the list. And as these roll out, we will get a hold of people. And hopefully you'll have be on the list to get an installation where you are so you can save a lot of money on electricity. So we'll talk to you next week. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.